This is Irish Illustrated Insider. It's Tuesday, April 27th. Tim Priester, Tim O'Malley, Pete Sampson, a few days before Notre Dame's annual, almost annual, blue gold game in Notre Dame Stadium. No fans, students, parents, a few media, including us, will be there on Saturday. But, you know, I'm not really big on predictions about what's going to happen in a blue gold game because it's really a crapshoot. But some of the things, guys, that you're looking forward to seeing, some individual matchups, some things that you are interested in seeing on Saturday.
Yeah, I'm interested to sort of see receivers try to make one-on-one plays. Can we see something from, I think, Keys and Lindsey in particular that you would think, like, all right, you know, either Lindsey's back to 2 years ago or Keys is able to stay healthy. And then I'd be interested to sort of see Baker and Fisher in sort of pass pro situations, handling a speed rush. Because I feel like we've seen a few clips where sometimes they do a nice job of it, sometimes they don't. But I think to be sort of a high-end offensive tackle at the college level, you got to do a nice job of it 98% of the time. So can they hit more of that mark? So mostly offensive side of the ball, I think, is what I'm interested in.
Yeah, I'm with you on Baker and Fisher, also Spindler, but the outside, we haven't seen Baker in a college practice. He's a redshirt freshman. It's incredible when you think about it, you know, because of last August. Mm-hmm. Baker and Fisher against those ends. And the beauty of that is, doesn't matter if they're getting end one or end two or defensive lineman two or three, maybe with Spindler, they have their hands full. So that's the defensive line, I think, is going to have a great day. By the nature of the game, trying to move people around, is they have better players right now than the offensive line and the backups. I don't know, a guy like Lawrence Keys is supposed to have a great spring, so I want to see him look different. I'd like to see guys I haven't seen enough of, like Xavier Watts. Johnson, obviously, want to see him out there. Cam Hart, comfort level. Cam Hart in coverage against somebody that's an elite quick receiver. I don't know about that with the hips and everything. And I'd like to see Houston Griffith tackle and not catch the running back as they collide together after an 11-yard gain or however that works out.
Yeah, that was I saw that you had that in the Monday musings, and that was on my list too. I want to see the physicality of Houston Griffith and Shane Simon. I think they've done some interesting things with Shane Simon where he just kind of run blitzes and scatters things up a little bit up front, kind of forces him to be a little bit more physical, which I think is a pretty good role. And that's the whole idea of the Marcus Freeman defense, is to create havoc, some chaos up front, which then trickles down and helps you on the back end. But anything involving defensive ends versus offensive tackles, right? Pass protection, pass rush. Mm-hmm. I want to see that. Fisher, I think Fisher has done really well in the clips that we've seen. Baker, I thought the move to right tackle is a really good move. I think that's a better fit for him. And MTA, who's looked really good rushing the passer, and Foskey, who's kind of been hit and miss. Again, based upon the clips that we get, I want to see those matchups. I want to see us safety play well.
Right.
Us safety. One's good enough because you know the other one's coming back. It will be is on the way. And we haven't even mentioned anything about the quarterbacks. Obviously, we'll be keeping an eye on quarterbacks as well.
I think we all want to see, for the case of summer message board and Twitter implosion, Tyler Buchner win the MVP of the game, because that would be a good time. Just out there, 12 passes, 10 complete, 3 touchdowns.
All to Jordan Johnson.
No, yeah, all to Jordan Johnson or something along those lines would be. I don't know, would that be better or would it be more fun if people are torn and it all goes to Tackus? Maybe all the
I think you skip ahead to Lorenzo Styles to really throw a wrench in all the offseason message board works. That would be fun.
There might be a few players that can't win the MVP because the coaching staff may cut it off before it reaches that level.
That's a good point. Get him out of there. Get him out of there.
Some guys that you have been impressed with that have shown up on a regular basis. I'll start with Myron Tagovailoa-Mosa. And I wrote about this in the film review the other day. He has looked much better at defensive end than I ever anticipated. Brian Kelly kind of admitted that himself.
Yeah.
he just looks like he's been unleashed a little bit on the edge. Plus, he's lost a little bit of weight. I think he's looked great. Jack Kaiser is always around the football, always, always, always around the football when we see a clip with him on the field. Heinisch looks good. I want to see more of Keys because he obviously has had a good spring. And I think the two freshman offensive linemen, Fisher and Spindler, I think you got to be really impressed with those guys. They seem very fundamentally sound and aware of what they need to do. Those are some of the guys that have jumped out to me.
I mean, Michael Mayer has been pretty good in the clips that we've seen. So
kind of a given.
Yeah, kind of a given on that one. But yeah, I think that Chris Tyree is not quite a given in the way that Mayer is, but I do think he has looked better in a significant way, like more powerful running between, a little more like Kyren Williams. I think that's been thing. You know, a couple older guys, Bo Bauer and Jason Adamilola, I think both have flashed quite a bit in the clips that we've seen, maybe more Adamilola at the beginning of spring. I guess I would just tag on Riley Mills there too. Sure. I mean, he looks like $1 million, and I think his play is starting. You're starting to see more of him in the clips that we get to.
Tim, before you jump into that, let me insert something here about Mills. The play the other day when Leofau just run blitz and the tackle in the end zone, Mills off the snap of the football occupied the right tackle and the right guard, which prevented Kristofic from sliding down to make any kind of contact with Leofau and
the tight end. Like I think he distracted Kristofic and then split Takis and Baker. I think,
I don't know if we're talking about the exact same play. Maybe
the one where Tyree got rocked in the end zone and for a safety.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yeah. I don't know that he reached all three.
I mean, he split the tight end and the tackle.
Just a great individual play that allowed another individual to make a play. Tim, go ahead.
I'm actually glad you inserted that because we first heard MTA might move to end in December. And I remember thinking, I don't picture him as an end, but you know what? Look at all those defensive tackles. Someone's got to do it. He's not going to say, I don't want to do it, because that only helps your pro potential probably if you're MTA. Mm-hmm. The fact that he's good at it is almost secondary to the fact that you have guys like Riley Mills and Jason Adamiola that can already do all the stuff you just said. You are now absolutely using your talent perfectly by getting your third defensive tackle, Riley Mills, and your fourth defensive tackle, Howard Cross, on the field more by moving Cross to nose tackle.
No, I think it's a great point. Great decision-making by a coaching staff behind the scenes that a lot of times is very underrated.
And if MTA is more than solid, then whoa, what a benefit you got. Because he was going to be fine. He wasn't not going to be pretty good against. He was going to be good against the run, right? There was no chance he was going to not hold up against the run. So if he's better than that,
you guys see him as, and again, people say, well, you can't decide anything based upon 3 minutes. Well, how many snaps have we seen MTA involved in? 55, 60? Right. Well, if you can't tell what you got there after seeing 55 or 60 snaps, then what are we doing here? I'm surprised at his agility. Maybe it's because he's lost weight. Maybe it's because, like he talked about, when there's a double team, well, the double team now comes from a tight end, not another lineman.
Yeah. And I want to throw Bo Bauer. Pete mentioned Bo Bauer. That's why I asked Marcus Freeman, can you play Bauer and White together? Because we've known for the last 2 years that it wasn't going to happen, whether it could happen or not. We were positive it wasn't going to happen. Bo Bauer said he wasn't cross-training. Clark Lee said he wasn't cross-training. And they weren't going to put two guys that struggled in pass coverage next to each other. It seems like Marcus Freeman is going to find a way for those guys to be next to each other once in a while. And I like it because it won't be on, Drew White can come off the field on every passing situation. And in blitzing situations, you have Leofau and maybe Shane Simon now. Bo Bauer has already played nickel. I like the four inside linebackers now, whereas last year I liked one of them.
Think about Leofau, Bauer, and Kaiser on the field as in passing situations.
In passing situations, yeah.
I mean, that is a really good group of linebackers against the
pass. But before we get away from Drew White is the best run-stuffing linebacker on the team, including Bo Bauer. And I know people are going to say, well, I've seen film of Bo Bauer. Drew White has done it on the field against Georgia and against North Carolina and against Clemson. Yep. Drew White has a role on this team, but I like the fact that his role isn't a 600 snap person like it had to be a couple years ago when they had no other linebackers.
Well, Mally and I were texting about this the other day. Like, who's the Notre Dame's leading returner in tackles for loss? It's Drew White.
Drew White. And he's the leading returner in stuffs for 2 years running, and he had a guy named Owusu Koramoah on his team.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a run-stuffing machine.
Yeah, and maybe you don't – maybe you just don't pull White off the field in every passing situation. I think Marcus Freeman's probably a little bit more open-minded about that. Not that Clark Lee was closed-minded. I mean, you're matching up. I get that.
Yeah.
But maybe that's a possibility.
Hey, having four linebackers who can play, that's good.
That is good. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll take that, right?
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt about it. All right. I was going to address some other topics, but I don't want this segment to run too long. We'll address in segment two coming up, burning up the boards. Burning up the boards, segment two, starting with a question from Mac341. Who has a breakout performance at the spring game that gets everyone talking about him over the summer?
I mean, offensively, it's hard to go away from Davis and Keys, right? As it seems like Davis is the guy that you trust the most to make some plays, although Davis is going to play a quarter. So I guess Keys, I'll go with Keys on that. I don't know how the running game is going to get to handle that defensive front. So it's hard to say Tyree for me. Now, the key to Tyree is if he gets his foot in the ground once it goes, then he just had a breakout 90-yarder, and that can get you talking for the entire summer. Defensively, I hope it's Foskey. I hope we see Foskey look like a bend the corner pass rusher that they need to be a great defense.
So you're saying the performance that gets people talking and then sticks in the fall, not the performance that gets people talking and then you're like, what happened to him?
No, yeah, that could be. I mean, Sebo Flemister's probably got the most yards rushing, right? But that's going to be
my pick because he's going to play hard every single second and opportunity he has
and play a lot.
So, and get a sliver and break it and break a tackle and
look good. Yeah, and he'll break tackles. He'll break plenty of tackles in this game. Yeah.
Foskey would, to me, Foskey, maybe Botello, but like one of those two guys, if they whipped some of the offensive tackles, I don't think that necessarily would be a bad thing because you have Jared Patterson to like maybe help that in the fall. And I do think, I mean, this defense, the secondary is what it is, but I think the pass rush is where like they can really ramp it up a notch or two. I think the secondary is going to be saved by the pass rush. If the secondary is really good this fall, I think it's because Notre Dame's pass rush surprised us.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that pass rush is created by a lot of scheme, by moving people around, different looking fronts. That's why I like Botello coming off an edge and just not, you know, the offensive line just not picking it up and him making a big play or two this weekend as well. So
Cone could have a really good day playing a quarter and a half and finding Michael Mayer down for 30 yards, finding Avery Davis down the post. Like I assume he's not going to be incredibly well protected. If they divide the offensive line, it hurts more too. You know, if Jack Cone gets two starters and three backups and Drew Pine gets three starters and two backups, neither one of them is overly well protected against this defense. You wonder how the offensive line will be drafted or put together to allow them to compete against the defensive line.
Yeah, which leads us to our next question from Wash ND. What will the number one offensive line configuration be in the spring game? I'm not sure that we're going to – I mean, maybe they want to do that. It's another opportunity to have those guys working together. And in recent practices, we've seen from left to right, Fisher, Spindler, Correll, Kristofic, and Baker. We don't know if Lug will play. He's coming off what I believe to have been a hamstring that prompted him to miss a couple practices. I think Baker's looked a lot better at right tackle than left tackle. You know, Gibbons, we really haven't seen Gibbons with the first unit in a while. He's been handling second team snaps at center. I'm getting away from the question, but we're not really sure exactly how they're going to configure them for the Blue Gold game.
I think
the question is more like, you know, what do we think it's going to be at Florida State, right? Because like what we see on Saturday, the relevance of that, is fairly low because of you got Patterson and Lug's injury, which you just mentioned.
Yeah, I would like to propose a a grouping, and I think I said this on the message board the other day, to take advantage of your skill and to keep everybody happy at the same time. And that would be Patterson at left tackle, Spindler at left guard. Well, not everybody, but Patterson at left tackle, Spindler at left guard, Correll at center, Fisher at right guard, and Lug at right tackle. Now, they haven't practiced like that, of course. Well, Patterson's not out there. Yeah. But I think that would, you know, and then if you want to move Baker to left tackle, where he's looked very good, you can do that in 2022. If you want to start Gibbons, I know some people say, well, the veteran guy is going to start against Florida State. That's a strong possibility too, because he is stronger and more knowledgeable of everything, being in the program, you know, four more years than those freshmen. But all things being equal, you know, do you play a freshman that you know is going to be very good and can hold his own over a guy that whose ceiling is a little bit less? What do you guys think it'll be by the fall?
I think the starting lineup in the fall will be Blake Fisher at left tackle, Jared Patterson at left guard, Zeke Correll at center, and then they'll have decisions to make about Kristofic or Spindler at right guard, and Lug or Baker at right tackle. And then whoever is not the right tackle is playing both, because I think that relying on Blake Fisher to go bell to bell at Florida State when it's 95 degrees out, you got to have some guys ready to in reserve there.
Yeah, I would be surprised at Florida State if you're Dylan Gibbons doesn't start at one guard position as a 23-year-old fifth-year senior that's played in games, as opposed to having Kristofic out there.
I agree.
Spindler. Yeah, I don't.
Have we even seen him at right guard? Not that
only
that,
he
not
played
that
right
that
guard
matters.
Against Syracuse is the only time he played.
I meant in the spring. Yeah.
Now, and getting back to the spring question, I would have Gibbons play center most of the game to see if he can be your backup center, because otherwise you have to figure out your backup center out of what Carmody and Pat Coogan. So yeah. Dylan Gibbons should be attached to snapping to make sure they have the, I know it could be Jarrett Patterson if it's long-term, but you don't want to, I think Gibbons could jump in and be a backup center, obviously. I don't know, man. I'm not changing too much from that. There is a job share at one of the tackle spots, which is kind of what Pete said, I guess, with Baker Fisher. You don't want Fisher going 80 snaps in Florida State. And I think over the course of all those games, it might help them not to be going 80 snaps. The key is a healthy Patterson, and then you go from there, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean you know, Patterson's versatility is kind of hurting him right now, because they know he can play anywhere. You can put him any one of those positions. I mean, you can't normally say that, because, you know, the center position factors in. Well, he has experience at that position.
And so Correll, you know, now being a center hurts him too, doesn't
and
it?
Right.
Correll has to play center. Yeah.
And I know that people are like, well, why would you put your best offensive lineman at guard in Patterson? It's so you would do that so that you would have the best combination of five. I mean, if they don't like Lug at guard, you know Patterson will play it well.
And that's antiquated too, Tim. 2017, the best offensive lineman was a left guard. Now I realize he's generational, but 2018, the best offensive lineman was a right guard. And Alex Bars before he got hurt. 2020, I know it was a left tackle, but the left guard might have been 1B, right? And Aaron Banks. I mean, guards are important. This isn't just like getting an NFL contract for being a blindside left tackle anymore. I don't get that notion anymore.
I really don't either. I don't understand. I mean, people look at the guard position like it's a hand me down. I don't get that. I don't get that. I realize there's more money at left tackle on the next level, but
none of these guys are making money at left tackle for what they do in 2021. Right. Jarrett Patterson wants to make a ton of money at left tackle. I don't think he's going to go be the Lombardi winner in 2021, his first year back after a foot surgery. I mean, I think he would have to play 2 years at left tackle, right? Or left guard and left tackle. I don't know.
I know
what you're saying. I just don't get the
I don't think Jarrett Patterson's going to be around for 2 years.
No, but it's a hard – I mean, I think it should be, but it's a hard – I have trouble anyone convincing me that Jarrett Patterson goes to left tackle and he's a first-round draft pick this year.
I agree with that. I agree with that.
Okay, then why not play 2 years at left tackle?
You're preaching to the choir here. Irish Math asks, am I right to be concerned that Tom Loy reported that Notre Dame is searching for a grad transfer wide receiver? To me, that implies that the praise of some of the receivers in spring practice may not be all that meaningful.
I mean, I think you got to listen to what the praise was. The praise was, we like them, but we need them to be a lot better.
Yeah.
Like that, the praise that Keys, Lindsey, and Wilkins got from Brian Kelly was not, we're going to go, these are playoff level, championship level receivers. It was, they're good. We need to figure out how to get them to be great. And like that, that was not a like, we're good type of vibe for Brian Kelly.
Right. It's been, there aren't a whole lot of years we've gone into where I think they were totally comfortable. Obviously 15, as Priester has pointed out a lot, with Will Fuller returning as a great player.
Yeah.
But also Chris Brown was a senior. Amir Carlisle was a senior. Corey Robinson was a better player going into that year than he ended the year being. So, I mean, preseason, we loved Corey Robinson. And then I think they really liked Boykin, Claypool, Fink, because Boykin was coming off the great game. And remember, all they talked about all spring and all August was how good Boykin was. It wasn't like to the point where fans were questioning, how was he that good? Other than that, I don't feel like they often talk about receiving core as being in great shape in the spring. I suppose Claypool and Fink in 19 were pretty obvious 1-2 for all of us and for everybody, playoff guys.
I mean, think about what Skowronek brought to the equation last year as a veteran football player. He caught 5 touchdown passes to lead the team. Now, I realize that those 5 came in 2 games, but the veteran presence of a receiver. I mean, I understand why the question is asked because, you've heard good things. And I don't know that any of us, I mean, we've said they look good in spring practice. I don't know any of us projected that, you know, Lawrence Keys is going to catch 60 balls this fall.
I don't feel that way.
No, I don't.
It's Kevin Austin. And for 3 years of Kevin Austin, if Kevin Austin shows up and catches 55 balls, then Notre Dame's going to have a really good passing
that
game.
That name will come up in a question here down the road.
Not Jay Tafel 1. Endy's defense under Clark Lee did a great job of avoiding the big play. Do you think Notre Dame will give up more big plays now that Marcus Freeman has installed a more aggressive defense? Having young corners on an island or press coverage isn't exactly a recipe for success.
I love this question because I'm working on a story that deals exactly with that.
I love questions that make me think of myself.
That was part of the research that I was doing yesterday that prompted me to miss the podcast. it's a great question because I mean Clark Lee was more keep the ball in front of you type of guy. They didn't blitz a whole lot, and Marcus Freeman wants to do that a lot. He wants to move things around up front and create havoc. And so looking at what Cincinnati did in 2018, they were like if you look at plays allowed of 10 yards or more, 20 30 40 50, Cincinnati was in the top 35 in each one of those categories in 2018. 2019 was a little bit of a transition for them defensively, and so they struggled with some of those numbers. And then last year, I mean, Cincinnati was 78th in the country in 40-yard plays allowed and 78th in the country in 50-yard plays allowed, and they only played 10 games. So there's some credence to that question. Especially when you're playing that type of defense for the first time under a coordinator. By the same token, if you create enough havoc up front,
right,
you are going to eliminate a lot of bad plays on the back end too.
I agree with all that. I don't look at big plays allowed as like really indicative of how good your defense was or wasn't. I mean, to me, I'm like, scoring defense is important,
right?
Obviously.
If you're eighth in the country in scoring defense, and that's the bottom line.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about sort of the rebuilding year, or reshuffling year in 2019. They were still very good in, you know, they weren't awesome in, rush defense necessarily, but I mean, they were 28th. I think they were 30th or around 30th in scoring. I'm just looking at their passer rating was third last year. And then in that rebuilding year, it was opponent pass rating was 15th. So I think the way that Freeman does it is you're going to give up some big plays, but obviously you're going to create a bunch. You're going to get, Tim O'Malley's probably going to be a lot of stuffs this year. You know, but there will probably be some 50, 60-yard plays against you mixed in too, and Notre Dame is going to live with that.
And I think stuffs are the key, because leaving the corners on an island in press coverage isn't something you have to do if it's 3rd and 9 all the time. That's what you do on 1st and 10 when you're trying to get those stuffs, and then you can be a little bit vulnerable. But if it's 3rd and 9 and you could find somebody to fill the Kyle Hamilton role up front, and you have that condor roaming the back, you can probably leave one guy on an island and let him take care of some of the messes, right?
Well, your front seven's good enough that you should be able to allow that condor to do a lot of ranging around back there. You know, for the record, Notre Dame last year defensively was terrible on big plays. You know why? Because they played Clemson twice in Alabama.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're absolutely right. When you try to break things down like that, you're like, man, Notre Dame's bowl season was so much better in 2013 with that defense. I wonder what happened. They played Rutgers.
They shut down Iowa State. What happened the next year?
Yeah, what happened the next bowl game? Obviously, they don't know how to prepare for bowl games. It was Alabama.
Did they not practice their anti-hurdle tackling drills?
Rutgers 33 hot. After spending time with both coordinators last week, how would you rank the following in order of most likely to be Notre Dame's head coach? Clark Lea, Tommy Rees, Marcus Freeman, and the rest of college football. Or pro football, too, I guess.
Would be one.
Yeah, yes.
Clark Lea would be two. I would put Rees third and Freeman fourth, although if you wanted to talk me into Freeman third and Rees fourth, I would be totally fine with that.
I'm stuck trying to picture Devontae Smith and Najee Harris on the field in the Camping World Bowl with Iowa State right now, so I'm a little thrown off by the hurdle tackle practice.
All right, gather yourself, O'Malley.
Yeah, I just thought that would have been a rough game with those two. Yeah, the field is easily one for me. Clark Lea is the obvious too, except I don't like going to Vandy and having success. So I want to see Clark Lea go to Vandy and have success. I think it's very difficult to do. I think he's a great defensive coordinator and a great football coach. I would probably flop Freeman for Rees on that one. I think the way Marcus Freeman could recruit as a head coach at Notre Dame and represent the university would be pretty enticing.
Yeah, you talked me into it.
Yeah.
No, I definitely agree with that. And no disrespect to Tommy Rees, because I do think he's going to be a quality offensive coordinator. But we're talking about the head football coach at University of Notre Dame, and that's some pretty heady stuff. The field has to be number one just because of the percentages. And here's the other thing to keep in mind. We're talking about a decision that probably isn't made for another 3 or 4 seasons.
Right.
So that changes the landscape completely. But if you ask me, like right today, I would say Field 1, Clark Lea 2, Marcus Freeman 3, and Tommy Rees 4. And again, no disrespect for Tommy Rees as a football coach and as a football mind.
Old hound dog, I sense a blossoming love affair with Drew Pine, even with one writer on another site. I don't know what this reference is, but I'm anxious to find out. Pine is the ultimate overachiever, and there's a lot to admire there. But for the life of me, I can't imagine Cohn not winning the job. What's your take? How have they looked? And is Cohn an upgrade over Book?
Well, Cohn's going to win the job. I think we all are pretty confident of that. And it's, I said this in the film review the other day. I don't think it's anything because that Drew Pine is not doing per se. He throws a very catchable ball. He's a leader. Everybody has confirmed that. But Cohn will win the job. They've both looked good. Buckner's looked good at times. Again, we're only getting snapshots. And is Cohn an upgrade over Book as a passer in the pocket? Yes. As a maneuverable quarterback trying to get side out of the playmaker outside of the pocket? No, he's not as good as Book. So I think most people would say we'll choose the one that can throw it better. I will remind everybody that in 18 starts, for whatever this is worth, Jack Cohn has more losses than Ian Book had in 35 starts. I don't really mean to use that stat as a definitive statement, but I'm just saying be careful what you wish for when you have a quarterback that won 87% of the time.
I think that Jack Cohn lost a lot of the same games that Ian Book lost, right? Like the Ohio State, Oregon, the higher end competition was a real struggle for him at times. So that I can't imagine Jack Cohn not starting against Florida State. I cannot get my head around Drew Pine definitively beating out a guy who started 18 Big Ten games and won for a Big Ten opponent and won 12 games.
And how would he, how would he beat him out?
I mean, it's like,
he hasn't played.
You go back to the clips and you were saying like, if you're watching 60 minutes of, or what do we have? Yeah. About 60 minutes by the end of it, right? 55 minutes. Like, I feel like we see Jack Cohn with the ones way more than we see Drew Pine. So, and every time we ask the coaching staff about the quarterbacks and leave it open-ended, they give you an answer about Jack Cohn first, and they give you an answer about Drew Pine second. It's just impossible for me to imagine Drew Pine going and getting Jack Cohn, because I think Jack Cohn is probably got the biggest learning curve of those quarterbacks between him and Pine, not Buckner, just because he's new to the system. Like, he should be a lot more experienced and comfortable in what Reese wants to run in July than he was in April, and a lot more in August than he was in June. Like, I just think that there's a big arc there for Jack Cohn.
These are related, so I'll move to the next question, because I do have a point about Pine going to get Cohn. Rob Ebert asks, after the Kaiser Zaire debacle, will the new Brian Kelly wouldn't let Pine and Cohn paddle and play out through the fall camp, would he?
Why don't you go ahead and answer?
Well, here's why I don't think Pine can go get Cohn. He doesn't have a differentiator like Ian Book's legs to go get Cohn, where the staff will say, you know what? Jack Cohn is completing 2% more of his passes, because they do chart every single thing. He reads pre-snap 1% better. But man, that Drew Pine just keeps running out of trouble and making plays for us. I don't think that exists. So I don't see why Pine would catch Cohn, the veteran. Whereas if you gave Drew Pine Malik Zaire's legs and everything else was Drew Pine, you might say, oh man, I don't know. We might just want to take those free 8 yards every time he drops back and runs for it. You know, yeah. That's which was what they did with Book for a couple of years.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. As it relates to the question about Kaiser Zaire, it's two different situations. I mean, Zaire had already won the starting job and then was injured. I don't think that there's virtually any way that you allow that competition to continue to be open-ended through August.
There was placating of Zaire at that point, right?
There's no doubt about that. And it was, I mean, I think we all felt it was in detriment to the team going in. And that's exactly what that Texas game was just on both sides of the football.
A long time ago, it feels like.
we're talking about the opener 2016. When you think about the decision-making that was made on both sides of the football that day, yikes, that wasn't one of the program's better moments, or one of the current coaching regime's better moments.
No.
Even if they had won that game.
Yeah, they still had to do something, didn't they? Well, you wrote about it. I don't think it was only because they lost. You're like, you gotta make a change.
I said something I've never said in my life. Fire the damn defensive coordinator.
Go the first damn game. This is one of those times. It's rare. We always talk to Bray about this. You know how coaches always know more than the reporters and the fans. Mike Bray's admitted, you guys are right. Bonzi Colson should have been playing earlier. And in this case, we were right. You guys should have gotten rid of Van Gorder before you brought him back.
And we are also right that Rob Kerr shouldn't have played his freshman year too.
Okay. I don't think that's getting as readily admitted. So DOC Irish, if Jack Cohn is able to throw vertically more consistently than Book, and this is pure speculation based upon height and arm strength, which wide receiver emerges as Cohn's Quintus Cephas at Notre Dame?
I think it would be Austin if you're talking about a wideout, but I mean, I still believe that Michael Mayer is going to lead the team in receptions because he's the ultimate security blanket. But I mean, if you're looking for these questions aren't, I mean, there isn't always necessarily a person that will be the Quintus Cephas at Notre Dame, but I think if it's anybody, it probably has to be a healthy Kevin Austin.
I don't think that there's another option for the Quintus. I mean, Quintus Cephas was a big dude.
Yes. From that standpoint, yeah.
Kevin Austin. But I mean, if you told Notre Dame, hey, this season you're gonna have the ability to have a healthy Austin with a healthy Mayer and then Kyren Williams and Chris Tyree out there at the same time, if those four options are out there at the same time for Jack Cohn, I mean, that was kind of the root of my question to Brian Kelly last weekend about sort of spinning off Tommy Rees in one-on-one matchups, like for Mayer, is the issue there drawing up new plays for Mayer to put in one-on-one matchups, or is it finding a better second, third, and fourth option? And if your second, third, and fourth option are Austin, Kyren Williams, or Chris Tyree, that's an exciting offense. I don't care who your quarterback is at that point, but that's where I think you could really see this offense take off.
I mean, Austin's the only choice for Quintez Cephas. There's just the physical prowess.
Yeah, I mean, if you're making like a physical comparison, I don't think none of us are underestimating Avery Davis and his
just
potential
not
impact.
That type of a player.
Although Clemson did it with Rodgers last year, I guess Powell eventually became the guy. He became the Quintez Cephas for Clemson down the stretch.
If Notre Dame has Clemson's quarterback, I could see somebody becoming the Quintez Cephas for Notre Dame as he throws 80-yard darts.
Either of them.
Either of them, yeah.
Both of them. Fine. The second guy had a stronger arm than the first guy. And he's going to be the first pick in the damn draft Thursday.
Speaking of which, question
from Terry Benedict, Haskins, Burrow, Fields. Ohio State will soon have three quarterbacks who they recruited and landed that will have been drafted in the first round. Is it recruiting, evaluation, or system that drives them to Ohio State? How can Notre Dame do the same? It wasn't that long ago that Notre Dame was landing elite quarterbacks.
Well, I mean, it's kind of an interesting question because Burrow transferred out, but Fields transferred in. And they've had quarterbacks who have not really worked out. I mean, Tate Martell was the guy there for a minute. So I think it's shrewd evaluation in terms of recruiting, but I also think it's probably even shrewder in terms of talent acquisition. I mean, Ryan Day could have been like, looked at Martell and said, you know, we can go with this guy, but he's like, no, we're going to go get Justin Fields and blow up our quarterback room. Did the timing work out where I don't know if Haskins won the job and Burrow left then, or it was when they went and got Fields and
I don't remember that, but Haskins winning the job was happening before that, right?
I think it was Haskins won the job, so Burrow left. I think that was the competition they had.
Right.
Well, I mean, Notre Dame signed the 83rd prospect in the country in 2018 in Phil Jurkovec, and then the 70th prospect in the country, Tyler Buttner, arrived here this spring. So it's not like Notre Dame hasn't gotten any prospects. The Jurkovec thing was, I mean, probably in retrospect was mishandled, the way the whole relationship deteriorated. And Buttner's here now. So, I mean, I don't know what to say. Ohio State, Alabama, and Clemson are developing the most NFL players in the country right now. And two of those teams are having the most postseason success. So, better evaluation, better job of recruiting, better coaching. Those are all very basic things.
And better job of evaluating and recruiting wide receivers, because Ohio State, LSU, and Ohio State have some awfully good wide receivers.
Yes. Great point.
Those guys.
Yeah, I did like sort of a – if you just ranked the receivers on Notre Dame and Ohio State's roster by the recruiting ranking, 1 to 10 – I believe it went 8 straight for Ohio State, and then Notre Dame, and then another Ohio State.
I mean, so Austin, or Johnson's the highest rated.
Johnson was the highest one. So they essentially, Ohio State has 8 guys higher ranked than Jordan Johnson.
And then Austin's pretty close to Johnson.
Yeah, Austin would be sort of off the back end of it. Yep.
Question from DMB346. Which is a higher number, Kyren Williams rushing touchdowns in 2021 or Michael Mayer receiving touchdowns? And I would imagine the question is being asked because of the offensive line disparity at Notre Dame from last year to this year.
Yeah, I still got Kyren Williams. I am going to go out on a limb yet again, even though I said I never would. I do think Michael Mayer might set the tight end touchdown record Notre Dame this year with 7. I cannot believe it's still 6. And with Kyle Rudolph, Tyler Eifert.
It's unbelievable.
Cole Kmet, and it's still 6. And it was set in 1978. That's how good Ken McAfee was. So it's still going to be, I say Kyren Williams. And I think the question could involve, like, you know, Kyren Williams will get rushing touchdowns, offensive line, Tim, Chris Tyree will get some touchdowns. I still got to go Kyren Williams over Michael Mayer.
I agree with everything you just said.
Yeah, I agree with that. I still, you know, Notre Dame had 33 rushing touchdowns last year. I'm sure that they won't, I wouldn't say they wouldn't approach it, but they won't surpass that this year, even with the extra game. But
Book help too. He was a guy that'll.
Oh, there's no, yeah, he had nine. Yeah. Most of, more than half of his rushing touchdowns came last year. And again, we won't see Jack Cohn score more than a couple.
Right.
Rushing touchdowns, I wouldn't imagine. Drew Brennan, 77. Is this the year Isaiah Foskey breaks out? I thought last year would be the one, which it seemed like it for a few games, but then he trailed off.
Hope so. And I agree with the trailed off sentiment as well. Although I think it's interesting looking back at his season, some of the big plays he made, how often he was just unaccounted for. Like, that's right, probably not going to happen anymore.
Right. Yeah.
So. Different,
I think that was early in the season, right? When we were,
yeah. You pointed it out, Tim.
If nobody blocks him, yeah, he's gonna keep having a great year. But you know, I mean, I think you have to. And I said that too. I thought that he tailed off there on occasion. He did finish second on the team in sacks with 4.5. Adeyemi Deji had 7, but you do have to account for the fact that, you know, Dalen Hayes was ahead of Foskey on the depth chart, so he was always going to get more snaps as long as he was healthy. But it's a legitimate question, and they absolutely need him to be, he needs to be the leading sack guy.
Yeah, it's a legitimate
he's a Viper
question.
I mean,
but let's give, you know, Creeds, he was a redshirt freshman that had played 4 games going into the year. We talked him up because we really liked him as a pro prospect as a redshirt freshman. So it said he tailed off. Pro Football Focus gave him 18 pressures, 10 in the first 3 games. So that lends credence to tailing off. I think you got to remember every position, man. Everybody wanted Lawrence Keys and Braden Lindsey to be great players as redshirt freshmen too. And here we are talking about Keys after a couple of years as the breakout senior. Hopefully Isaiah Foskey's a year ahead, right? As a redshirt sophomore / true junior, he could be the breakout player because they weren't as good at rushing the passer last year as they were the previous 2 years. And it's hard to argue against that reality.
We now turn our attention down the stretch here to the NFL draft coming up this weekend. Although I do want to slip in the fact that one of the most incredible, we said this 2 weeks ago when Notre Dame came back from a 7-0 deficit against Georgia Tech in baseball, they were down 9-0 and scored 12 runs in the top of the 8th at Boston College to beat Boston College. So this is my little baseball plug, but we move into the draft and it's Nick 2014. Who says, if you were a financial advisor for Notre Dame's NFL draft hopefuls, would you have advised any of them to return for another year?
There's two options, right? Tremble and Banks.
I didn't think of Banks really per se because I think that he's a high enough rated guard that now, you know, the scenario had he come back as a left tackle, that might have created some other things. I don't think Aaron Banks was ever going to be a left tackle on the NFL level, though, so I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Who'd you say besides Banks? Tremble?
Tremble, you could advise to come back. But, you know,
he was given a second-round grade as far as we know.
Exactly. And, you know, one other thing with Tommy Tremble, the way they used him as a hammer, that's a rough life 2 years in a row for a team that's going to – if they're going to use you the same way, I know they would throw to him more, but – That's some buildup on your body you don't need if you're Tommy Tremble, right? Going hammering people for 12 straight games, 60 snaps. That's a lot.
Yeah, I wouldn't say he had 1 foot out the door when the season started, but he was already looking towards the door.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about that. We said that in the preseason that if he has a decent year, he's going to leave. He didn't have a decent year numbers-wise.
He had a great year as a blocker, though.
But he had an incredible year as a blocker. Pete, what do you think?
I wouldn't argue with Tremble. I don't know if he's suddenly going to jump up and be Kyle Pitts, especially with Mayer on the roster.
Yeah.
I think Banks would have had an opportunity to move up. I'd be interested, you know, if Robert Hainsey moved to center. Let's say Robert Hainsey was a center on this team. You know, does he go from a fifth round pick to a second round pick? Maybe. But I think I agree with O'Malley. Banks, to me, is the guy that could have moved the most.
I think that's a good point about Hainsey. I think Hainsey probably showed enough at the Senior Bowl that will kind of mitigate that. The two guys I wrote down, I mean, you know, Skoranek could have used a full healthy year, you know, at Notre Dame. And maybe Nick McLeod, although he ran a sub 4.4. Where was that? At the other bowl game.
He had to get out for his shoulder, though, didn't he?
Yeah, no, I get that. I mean, I just in trying to answer the question, I still, and we're going to give our predictions as to where these guys are going to be drafted. I find it hard to believe that Tommy Trumbull is a top 3-round guy as a blocker. I'm sure he's capable.
He's fat. I mean, they probably believe he could become a
I get that, and he should feel that he can become a competent catcher of the football. It's just, and I will predict him to still be up there because that's where everybody else has him. You know, but you know, I don't know. I hope for the best for him because he is a warrior. There's no doubt about it.
Matty Mill, 324. Name one indie player you were shocked didn't have a better NFL career, and one you were shocked at how well he did.
I don't know. Brady Quinn is the guy that I thought would have. I mean, he had almost no NFL career. I'm not saying he would have been a Hall of Fame quarterback, but I would have thought he would have played in the league for much longer. And Matthias Farley would be the other end of the spectrum.
Good one. I hadn't thought of that, but there you go.
Right. Just the fact that he had an NFL career at all is shocking to me. And he's had a really nice one for himself.
I mean, it's hard to get past Farley. That I had not thought of. Brady Quinn, modern, and then Chris Zorich was one of the best players I've ever seen in my life growing up. I thought Zorich would have a, you know, consistent all-pro career that Bryant Young ended up having. He kind of that Bryant Young impact where you're Hall of Famer, basically, and I thought Zorich would be that. Brady Quinn, modern. I thought Brady Quinn would be a pretty good quarterback. I pegged Clausen for not being athletic enough, but I thought Brady Quinn was strong enough and athletic enough to become a quality player.
Yeah, but you know what? Brady Quinn was not.
I know.
He wasn't accurate enough. I mean, if you go back and look as great a year, 2 years as he had, 2005 and 2006, the accuracy that you need on the NFL level is just off the chart. Now, I think we've had a question similar to this. Kavari Russell as a third round draft choice, I thought would have a much more productive NFL career.
Like Farley. He could at least be Farley and start, right?
Yeah. Tim, what'd you want to insert?
I was going to say the thing about Quinn is look around the league and like when you're watching Brady Quinn play in college, and then you watch Kirk Cousins play in college and he's the richest quarterback in the world. You're like, you know, Brady Quinn, I thought maybe it would be better than Kirk Cousins coming out, right? There's so many quarterbacks.
No, that's legit.
For instance, there might be a quarterback selected too high on Thursday that is going to resonate in the Tim O'Malley Monday Musings for the next year and a half. And if that happens, we may have to change Monday Musings.
So. Did you hear who Charlie Weiss is all in on? Mac Jones.
Jones, huh?
He's the 11th best player on the. He was 11th best player on this offense at his school. So that's what you're going with right now. That's what you need. Okay. The best offensive line in the country, the best receivers in the country, the best running back in the country, and the best coaching staff in the country. But
have you broken down his film for your daily radio show that Charlie Weiss has on national?
No.
Oh, okay.
Okay. That's fine. That's great. You know what's going to look like his film? Different, because not he's not going to be like this. No Smith. No, Waddle's not open. Hang on. Harris, I gave the ball to Harris last time, and the line's still blocking and throwing people around. And then
you could finish your answer to this question on our next episode of the podcast. Yeah. You have that long.
All right. That's true.
Guys that were better than I thought, and Farley's a great choice. Bennett Jackson's still playing in the league, man.
Yeah.
You know, that's no small feat. I think TJ Jones has carved out. I'm not sure where he is in his career.
I believe he may be retired.
He may be now.
Theo had a good career.
I'm going to go back a little bit here real quickly, and then we'll get to our last question. John Sullivan, I did not expect to have long, great career that he had with the Vikings. Did you expect Justin Tuck to be the pro that he was?
He was the best player on the field in the most famous Super Bowl ever. That's pretty important.
And then I'll throw one more out, David Gibbons. With the Patriots.
I will I'd throw just Romeo Okwara, I thought would hang around in the league for a while. However, he, I believe, is currently on a $30 million contract, which I did not think was probably going to be in Romeo Okwara's future.
There's a lot of these. Like, I thought Zach Martin was going to be a really good pro for 10 years. I didn't know he'd be a first ballot Hall of Famer the second he finished his second or his sixth season. That's remarkable.
Yeah.
We got to throw a plug in for J.J. Jansen, who I didn't know would still be snapping after 47 years. So
good one.
Also on there.
I would have probably gone a long ways before remembering J.J. Jansen, but good for him. He's had a if there's a Hall of Fame for long snappers, he's in it. Okay, last question, and I'm going to expedite this process here a little bit. And the question is from Judge Arthur Vandalay, final NFL draft predictions. I will say the player. You tell me what's going to happen with his respective draft this weekend. We'll start with tight end Brock Wright.
Undrafted.
Okay. Sean Crawford, safety, corner,
same.
Nickel.
Undrafted.
Free agent.
Javon McKinley.
Undrafted.
Free agent.
Tommy Kramer.
Undrafted.
Round 7.
Okay. I'm in agreement with all of you up to this point. I will say Kramer round 7 because of size and experience. Good Lord.
Just seems.
Nick McCloud.
6.
Okay, I'm gonna say undrafted because of the medicals.
That's what I was going to say. The speed might get him drafted over the medicals. So that's why I would do late 6th. And he's a player.
I can't say both Kramer and McCloud getting drafted because then I'm a homer, so I guess I say Kramer drafted, so I'll say McCloud free agent. I mean, definitely is in a camp. Wide receiver Ben Skowronek.
Undrafted
for me.
I think that there's enough there for a 7th round. Okay, now you talk about medicals. Dalen Hayes, defensive end.
That's a good one.
He's a tough one for me to project. I mean, he really is.
I'll go 7th with him.
I'll go 6th again. I'm a big fan of the 6th round here with Dalen Hayes and Nick McCloud. Kramer in the 7th. That's how I am right now.
I'll say Hayes in the 6th. Most people are saying we'd be crazy that he's going to go much higher than that. And then another difficult one. Ian Book.
7th.
Same thing I said in June. On a podcast, 7th, staying right there.
I will agree with that. Ade Ogundeji.
6th. Measurables are good. So I think that he sneaks into that room.
Yeah, I could even see 5th for Ogundeji.
I have him 5th. I think the measurables could possibly bump him up to the 4th, but I will say 5th. Robert Hainsey, interior offensive lineman now.
I'll go 5th.
I was going to say 5th as well, so I'm a Pete.
You know, I'm going to say 4th. His strength was really good. He's bigger than you think. When you see the composition of his body, he's got a short torso, which is perfect for interior. I'm going to say 4th. Tommy Tremble, tight end.
4th.
3rd.
4th. I'll go 4th.
I will say late 3rd. Aaron Banks, offensive guard.
3rd.
3rd as well.
Middle of the 3rd. I'm being a little specific here. we're down to 2. Liam Eichenberg, tackle/guard, I guess.
2nd. Someone smart. Late 2nd. 2nd round. Somebody smart out there.
Good pick in the 2nd.
Within the top 50 picks, 2nd round. Yep. And then Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah.
Return to school. Make the defense better.
That's your suggestion?
Yep, that's my prediction.
You're his financial advisor.
I think it'll be a great day for Notre Dame fans Thursday, and Owusu-Koramoah find a loophole. No, I'm going to say first round.
I think first round, I don't have the draft order in front of me, but kind of in the low 20s, and by low 20s, I mean like 20th through 24th, somewhere in that realm.
Maybe I'm being influenced by some mock drafts that I've seen, but I keep seeing some good press in terms of a good fit for The Las Vegas Raiders. They have the 19th. I think 17th.
Somebody asked, unless they made a move. Pete and I were asked that question on Twitter. And the guy thought Uzukormo would go to the Raiders. But I would be a disingenuous draft advisor for Uzukormo to get him back at Notre Dame to watch him win the Heisman as a fifth-year senior.
So would you take JOK in the third pick over Mac Jones?
Yes. There's no doubt about it, because you could get you don't need to get Mac Jones there. You didn't need Gino Toretto in the whatever round you went in either, in the fifth round or whatever. Good God, what are we doing here?
I thought we'd end on a high note with O'Malley with that one. Hey, we appreciate you joining us today.
They traded up.
Tune into the – you don't know that they're going to pick Mac Jones.
I'm just preparing myself for
– Maybe Urban's going to pick Mac Jones.
There you go. That would be
I think Jack Freeman is going to be in tears when the Bears trade up to pick Mac Jones.
Oh, yes. I have hope the Bears can trade up again.
I have a little bit of faith in Charlie Weiss, but as I said in response to a message board thread, even the best evaluators are wrong. So we'll see what happens this weekend. Hey, thanks for joining us for Irish Illustrated Insider.
Thank you for listening to the Irish Illustrated Insider Podcast. If you enjoy our coverage of Notre Dame football, please consider supporting the podcast with a small donation. Go to irishillustrated.com/support. Your support will help Irish Illustrated continue to be the leader in coverage of Notre Dame athletics.